Barnard?
Here.
Bebout? Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Esquibel? Geis?
Here.
Hastert? Hicks?
Here.
Hines? Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Nicholas? Nutting?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Anderson?
Here.
Bebout here. Hastert?
Here.
Nicholas?
Excused.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Reverend Gilbert.
Eternal God, frequently we hear our national leaders asking you to bless America. So on this morning we ask you to bless us Americans with perceptive insight that enables us to reach right decisions. Bless us with patience toward good people who do not always see things as we do. Bless us with righteous indignation and redemptive action toward those who destroy life. Bless all civilians and military who promote and preserve peace. Bless all being called upon to provide safety, warmth, and well-being amid this winter storm sweeping across the states. Bless us with random acts of kindness that may become seeds of kindness borne by others. Bless all in this chamber on this day, so today will be a day of mutual success. Bless us with all necessary abilities, attitudes, and actions that will help us make these United States of America a beacon of hope and a foundation of strength for the whole world. Gracious God, while we ask you to bless us, it is with all honesty and humility we ask you to enable us to be a blessing to you. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 31st, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. No doctor for today. The nurse for the day is Penny Eichel from Sheridan. on this day in Wyoming history in 1929, poet Carl Sandburg lectured at the University of Wyoming. This next piece came to me by way of a text message from a friend who is a veterans advocate. I found it to be one that is most worthy of recognition, and so I share that with you this morning. Frank Woodruff Buckles is the last living World War I veteran, and today he celebrates his 110th birthday. And when he was asked what his secret to longevity was, he said, "When you feel like dying, don't." Oh. Messages from the House.
January 31st, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 179. Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 142, discrimination, ayes 25, noes 33, excuse 2. The bill has been indefinitely postpone Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Bill's on second reading. Senate File 85, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 85, Game and Fish Violation Penalty, sponsored by Senator Burns.
There are no amendments. Senate File 85, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 91, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 91, Wildlife-Livestock Disease Research Partnership Funding, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
There is an amendment, being the Emmerich Amendment. I would ask if the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 91, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 13.
Senator Emmerich, would you like to move this amendment and speak to it at this time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number 1. I would move second committee or stand second reading amendment number 1 to delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment number 1 to this line, page 1, line 13. It essentially removes the verbiage relating to brucellosis. And I think by eliminating this little caveat into the bill, we are not restricting ourselves as to good, solid research in all areas of wildlife and livestock. I think it just ties us down a little bit too much. I would urge its passage.
Any other comments or questions in regard to this amendment? Seeing none, then the question is, I'm sorry, I didn't see you back there, Senator Burns. Go ahead, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, just for my clarification, does this also get rid of the Standing Committee amendment on the $125,000 versus the $200,000?
Are there any other questions before Senator Emmerich? Why don't you wait just a second, Senator? We have another comment question over here. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, we didn't really get a very good explanation in Committee of the Whole yesterday as to why the Standing Committee took this action and put in this provision that relates to brucellosis. And I, for one, would sure appreciate if they would explain a little more what they did and why.
Other comments and questions? I think Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. A little bit on the discussion that we had during our Appropriations Committee meeting was that we've got, in this budget and in other budgets, an ample amount of money for brucellosis. And that was the testimony, that is pretty well covered. But the Livestock Board, during our JAC hearings and basically said that they would like to be able to go over some other diseases and handle some other diseases. In fact, they had a request for an emergency fund, I believe, of well over $500,000 in the standard budget to effectively handle emergency situations outside of brucellosis for other diseases. Now, we didn't grant that because there's an emergency fund in the governor's office. But those other diseases are out there. The Livestock Board is well aware of them. This goes directly to that. You can sleep well that brucellosis is covered. But if you have any concern about any of these other diseases that are out there, you can lose some sleep over it unless we start putting some money directly toward those. And so that was pretty much the testimony that we got, is that brucellosis is covered, but we need to move toward this other area.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me tell you what we did on this. With respect to this appropriation, There's already money in this program that's in the standard budget. The sponsor came and asked for additional funding to add to the existing funds. So our question was, is supplemental budget, why and what's your plan? And during the course of that discussion, it became evident that it hadn't been fully thought out. So we had the advantage at that time to have three agencies. We had the Game and Fish, we had the Department of Ag, and we had the university. And what we asked them to do, we took a break and said, look, we won't work this bill until you bring back to us an inventory of all the dollars being spent for the various high-profile diseases, whether it's chronic wasting disease, brucellosis, because we know there's a lot of money going out in three different agencies. I don't know whether it's been passed out, but if it hasn't, we can get it to you. What was brought back to us was a complete inventory of all the money, all the research being paid for brucellosis, chronic wasting disease, and some other variety of diseases through these three agencies. Then we went back to the sponsor and said, okay, tell us what you want to do. Are you trying to supplement monies in these elaborately funded research programs that we have out there? And the sponsor said, no. What I want to do is focus on augmenting some dollars in these areas that are underfunded, that don't have the high-profile attention. And as a consequence to that, we reduced the funding, recognizing that there's already funding in the budget, and then specified that it was not intended simply to go out and augment these areas that are already well-funded through multiple agencies. So what this does is reduce the budget, but make sure that the sponsor, what his vision was, would be better implemented by this restriction. And if you haven't seen it, then I'd encourage the sponsor to get it circulated, which was the inventory. And it was a good opportunity for us, frankly, to say, look, we have three agencies here. Everybody collectively bring to us your total expenditures in all these areas. And we're spending a lot of money on brucellosis. That's not to say that we couldn't spend more money, but what the point was here is that's not what the sponsor was asking for. He was asking to augment some specialized research in some areas that he thought were underfunded, and so we restricted it. But at the same time, we didn't specify the purpose for it, knowing that the sponsor had some other things in mind, a variety of things, but it wasn't brucellosis, which is adequately funded.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, let me run through these figures for you right now, so hopefully maybe clarify some of these issues. In that Wildlife Disease Partnership account today that they are actively seeking requests for proposals for, there is $125,000. That may be available for brucellosis or anything else that Wildlife Partnership Board determines that they want to. So there is a little bit of money out there for going forward, but currently in the last biennium, there was $45,000 awarded to the brucellosis task force, and basically that was to fund the proceedings and the duties of the brucellosis task force. In the last 18 months, for research on wildlife diseases, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department has got about $3.4 million, and of that, 55%, which is roughly $1.8 million in the last 18 months, is gone through brucellosis, and that's a research component. And then there's been some other flow-through funds to the State Veterinarian Lab, was $281,000 in general fund appropriations. That provided for a full-time position and the equipment and supplies in the State Vet Lab to be able to test for brucellosis. To the state veterinarian, there was an additional $9,600 for out-of-state travel. And then also to the Wyoming Livestock Board and the state vet, there was a little over $1 million for a testing reimbursement program for producers impacted. And then the University of Wyoming also has a general fund appropriation of about $600,000 for the next biennium, which is segregated out $200,000 a year for brucellosis vaccine and brucellosis test research. And then there was $100,000 per year for their participation in the Consortium for the Advancement of Brucellosis Science. So consistent with Senator Nicholas, at least those entities felt that there was adequate funding today, and the fact that there was an additional $125,000 that wasn't obligated. And that was the testimony that we received from the entities that are doing the research. So I hope that clears up any issues.
Senator Nicholas, for your second time.
Mr. President, and I would speak on and against the amendment. I apologize for with these the appropriations process. I'm back and forth a little bit more than I'd like to be. But, ladies and gentlemen, the issue here is simply this. When there is already money inside the this account, that's already budgeted. The sponsor of the bill asked to supplement the funding and also specified, look, we know that there's lots of money out here for these other programs. How do we go about augmenting funding for the some of the smaller critical areas that need research that are not already well funded? And what the Appropriations Committee did is reduce the appropriation and put some restrictions on it to better implement what was the sponsor's request. I mean, typically, this is something, by the way, we'd say, look, bring it through the budget process, not a supplemental budget, not adding it. At the same time, we know that there are some new members that are coming in that have some great ideas and have some want to push some money out for some areas that might have not been considered. So we're trying to balance between saying this is not something that is needed, it's not an emergency, at the same time trying to recognize we have new members with new ideas, and to open it up, to put more money in it and take off the restrictions does not surgically put the money where we're intending to. So I'd urge that you stick with the JAC recommendation and reject the second reading amendment.
Okay, on the second reading amendment, is there any other discussion before the sponsor of the amendment takes his second shot? Seeing none, Senator Emmerich, would you like to address this for your second time?
All of the Mr. President, all of the arguments that have been put forth are very valid. I just find that the amendment is restrictive. Let research go where it wishes to go. And if it happens to be for brucellosis, then so be it. I urge passage, please.
Okay, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 91. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senate file 91 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Yes, Senator Coe.
The floor.
You may.
Today I'm pleased to introduce to you a distinguished Department of Defense teacher from Patch Army Base in Stuttgart, Germany. Herr Stefan Zappi, I hope I said that right, and his wife Kathleen, it turns out, have multiple Wyoming connections. Diana Ullman, former Wyoming State Superintendent and Secretary of State, as head of DODEA schools in Europe, named Stefan as the 2007 DOD Teacher of the Year. Kathleen Zappi was the teacher of the grandson of our former Governor Mike Sullivan and our colleague Senate President Jim Twyford, and now Air Zappi is the first grade teacher of Jackson Ketchpole, grandson of former Superintendent Judy Ketchpole. All of them rave about the quality of this education team serving our military families as Zappies are in the adoption process of a Wyoming child. Along with Judy Ketchpole, please welcome Air right up here in the balcony.
Well, thank you, and welcome to Wyoming, and welcome to the Senate. And at times like this, the world seems indeed quite small, doesn't it?
We are quite amazed at the connections that people have given us to enjoy.
Thank you so much. Back on second reading, Senate File 93, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 93, Dietetic Licensure, sponsored by Senator Martin.
There is an amendment, that is the Scott Amendment, and I think that Senator Scott, would you like to move this amendment after we read it in? This reading clerk will please read in the second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 93.
Senate File 93, second reading amendment number 1, page 19, line 6.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, licensure bills, I always look for the fencing paragraph. I found it, and it had this classic language in it that says nobody shall engage in the practice of dietetics. That's inconsistent with the whole spirit of the rest of this bill. And so I'm proposing with this amendment to take that language out so the sentence would read, unless licensed to practice under this act, no person shall represent himself to the public as being a dietitian or a licensed dietitian. So you've got to be one if you claim to be one, but you don't forbid other people from doing things that may be within that scope of practice. That's what the amendment does, and I would urge the Senate to adopt it.
Further commentary, Senator Martin.
Mr. President, we consider this a very friendly amendment.
Other commentary in regard to this amendment? Ready for the question? Question is on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 93. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Martin, would you like to speak to the bill?
Mr. President, yesterday there was a number of questions that were brought up during the presentation of the bill. You'll find on your desk a response to those questions. At this point in time, I won't run through those and take up the time, but I'd be glad to get with you if you have further questions. So on both pages, front and back, and there was a question concerning setting of the licensing fee, and there's a review of the other licensure boards and the fees that they presently have set. So with that, Mr. President, I would ask for...
Thank you. Any other commentary in regard to the bill? Seeing none. Senate File 93, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 106, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 106, School Finance Local Resources, sponsored by the School Finance Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 106, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 117, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 117, Wyoming Reclamation and Restoration Center, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
There are no amendments. Senate File 117, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 119, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 119, Real Estate Broker Salesman Revisions 2, sponsored by Senator Johnson.
There is an amendment. It's the Ross Amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time, please.
Senate File 119, second reading amendment 1, page 41, line 22.
Senator Ross, would you like to move this amendment and speak to it, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment 1 to Senate File 119. Folks, what this amendment does is it goes in on page 41 and reduces the fine on a first offense. The first offense in this bill is a misdemeanor. And while our statutes do not prescribe what a fine should be for a misdemeanor, we do know that the statutes prescribe that you that a misdemeanor is anything that is 1 year or under a year in a jail term. In speaking with the director of, or the executive director of the board, the feeling was that they needed more a deterrent to those practicing real estate unauthorized or unlicensed, and that it costs about $1,000 to get a license when you go through all that, and so that the fine at $1,000 wasn't much of a deterrent. You might as well just pay the fine and go ahead and make put together a deal or whatever they want to do and make a lot of money at the same time. So what I've tried to do here is strike a middle ground, and that is to take it to $2,500, which would reduce the fine, provide for a deterrent, but also recognize that this is a first offense. And generally, we don't see in misdemeanors fines more than $1,000. So with that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Comments or questions? Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I would also ask you to vote for this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Johnson. Any other commentary in regard to the amendment? Seeing none, question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 119. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. There are no further amendments.
Mr. President.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
May I speak on the bill?
You may. We are on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday there were several questions asked from the senators, and I would like to answer them as I said I would. As far as the fines go, we have now changed them from $5,000 to $2,500 for the first one. The $1,000 fines that are in there right now have not been increased or changed since the original license law was enacted in 1971. And as the majority floor leader, $1,000 isn't much of a deterrent now, but I think it is a proper deterrent with $2,500. Then if they do it more, they can be fined up to $5,000. And, of course, it's up to $2,500 for the first time. On page 55, line 6, why increase the amount one can receive from the recovery fund from $4,000 to $10,000? The realtors contribute to the recovery fund, and if a plaintiff sues a licensee and gets a claim and wins, and the licensee skips, goes bankrupt, or whatever, the plaintiff can go to the Real Estate Commission and request up to $10,000 from the real estate recovery account using a writ of execution, which says that they can't get it from the defendant. And the recovery fund was established in 1984. Very few claims have been made to the fund. And in today's market, $10,000 would just make a lot more sense in trying to make one whole than $4,000. The maximum is $50,000 in that recovery fund, and there's been $50,000 in there for years. What are the current exemptions for licensing? Property managers have always had to be licensed unless they qualify for the exemptions under little I as an employee managing his employer's property, or under Romanet 6 as a resident manager. If it's your own property, you can manage it. We have that in our family. I manage the apartments that I own, the rental property I own. My daughter is a licensed is a licensee, works for a property management firm, and does the appropriate work for them. So I hope that I've answered all of the questions successfully, Mr. President.
Senator Burns?
Mr. President, a question, because it's not entirely clear from my reading of the bill, but I just want to make sure. Can somebody manage property if they're not a licensee, if they're an employee of the owner of the property?
Are there other questions on the bill before Senator Johnson rises for his second time? Seeing none, Senator Johnson, would you like to answer that question, please?
President, property managers have always had to be licensed unless they qualify for the exemption under little I as an employee managing his employer's property.
Okay. Senate File 119, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list for us?
Mr. President, third reading consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 50, Medicaid Options Study. Senate File 89, Adult Protective Services. Senate File 94, Liability for Emergency Equipment Donations. Senate File 102, Medicaid Cost Study. Senate File 109, State Parks, Temporary Peace Officers. Senate File 124, Overweight and Oversized Vehicle Penalties. And Senate File 128, Abandoned Vehicles, Storage Expenses.
Would anyone like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 50, Senate File 89, Senate File 94, Senate File 102, Senate File 109, Senate File 124, Senate File 128. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebelt.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks. Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson,
aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 50, are there any changes? Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 50, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 89, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 89, 30 ayes. Senate File 94, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 94, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 102, are there any changes? Closing vote. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 102, 26 ayes, 4 noes. Senate File 109, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 109, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 124, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Coe, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Emmerich, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 124, 18 ayes, 12 noes. Senate File 128, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote close. Senate File 128, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 50, Senate File 89, Senate File 94, Senate File 102, Senate File 109, Senate File 124, and Senate File 128 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate Joint Resolution 2. Third reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, Healthcare Freedom, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution by creating a new section specifying that no federal or state law shall compel participation in any healthcare system by any person, employer, or healthcare provider, sponsored by Senator Nutting, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are some amendments, and the first amendment is the Perkins Amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, Third Reading Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 7.
Senator Perkins, would you like to move and present that amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 2 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. From our discussion yesterday. First of all, I made the mistake yesterday of saying that this would have been in Article 7 section. Would have been in Article 7, and I was wrong. The amendment that we passed yesterday would be in Article 1. It would be new Article 1, Section 38. Just wanted to make that correction. To the amendment, what the amendment does, Mr. President, is it does a couple things. The good tall senator from Natrona County made a good point, I believe, yesterday. And so what this amendment does, if you look, the first part of this amendment changes the language in paragraph C from our amendment yesterday that was narrowly adopted. So it changes it from, if you go to subsection C, or what it would be now is the rights granted under this section to protect the health and general welfare of the people and accomplish the purposes set forth in the Wyoming Constitution. This changes it. The first part of this amendment changes it so that it would read that the rights granted under this section to protect the health and general welfare of the people or to accomplish the other purposes set forth in the Wyoming Constitution. So it made that, it disjoins that so that wouldn't be a combination test that for the legislature to act. The concern was yesterday they would both have to promote the health and general welfare of the people and accomplish the purposes set forth in the Constitution. This amendment would make it so it would have to be either one of those. It's going to have to either protect the health and general welfare of the people or accomplish the other purposes of the Constitution. So that's what this would do. The The rest of it was it goes to the ballot statement, and the ballot statement, as amended yesterday, left the terms about health care access in it. This would just make it so we're talking about health care decisions instead of health care access. That's what this amendment does, and so it asks for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other commentary in regard to this amendment? Seeing none. Third reading amendment number one to Senate Joint Resolution 2. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. There is a second amendment. That is the Schiffer Amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, third reading amendment number 2. Delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Schiffer, would you like to move that amendment and discuss it, please?
Mr. President, I'd move third reading amendment number 2. Mr. President, what this amendment does follows the same concept that we had before. It takes out all the carve-outs and all those things. But what it specifies, we grant to our citizens in Article 1, Section 38, the right to choose. That's the critical word. That's what I think the people want, is their ability protected in the Constitution to choose their health care. Other than that, the legislature has an obligation for health and safety, things like prisoners and military people and all those. We can do all that by statute, but what we're saying in the Constitution is people of the state of Wyoming, you are protected. You have the right to choose the access you want for health care. It's simple. It's straightforward. It does what the people want. I ask for your support for this amendment.
Questions or I think Senator Scott?
Mr. President, yeas and nays, please.
Okay. Yeas and nays being called for. Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm going to urge the Senate to vote no on this. It seems to me that this amendment, where you say the right choose, as defined by the legislature, gives the people nothing. Now, it doesn't set any limits on what we might do. And I think the purpose of this, whole purpose of this constitutional amendment, was to put some outer limits on what the legislature, what the government can do in terms of this health care reform, which is going to go on for, I don't know how long, decade or two, longer till we get it right, because we've got a problem we can't live with. So I think we'd be better off with the amendment as it stands before us without this amendment, which does, in fact, do something.
Other comment, Senator Nutting?
Thank you, Mr. President. I also urge a vote of no to this amendment. Yesterday, a decision was made by the courts to uphold the states, of whom Wyoming is one, who have challenged the federal mandated insurance plan. And that action makes this amendment even more important than ever, because it will help to establish from here forward who has responsibility for health care. This amendment, as previously written, reinforces state rights. I received a lot of emails today about this amendment, and one was especially strong words. What was sent to me was, it will take courage to restore our constitutional republic. It has been said that this amendment is not just about health care, but it's about state rights and those things that have been guaranteed to us in our Constitution. The amendment as just proposed, amendment number 2, treats this as if it's only a health care issue. and it doesn't direct our position of courage to restore our constitutional republic. So I ask that this amendment be defeated.
Other comments in regard to the Second Amendment? Senator Schiffer, you'd like to take your second shot, please.
President, and members of the Senate, and I agree with my colleague, yesterday's decision was it just undermined the underpinnings of the health care as we knew it day before yesterday. Health care, the whole concept of health care, is in a tremendous change. We have to be careful what we put in our Constitution, that we can not only protect our citizens, that we can protect the rights that we have as citizens. That's what we're talking about here. This amendment goes directly to the rights of the citizen, not the rights of the state, not the rights of the federal government. The way I've crafted it, it says to the citizens, you are protected in that choice. I think that's fundamental. No one can predict where the health care system is going to go in this nation, certainly not after yesterday. But we still must be able to guarantee to our citizens, not to the federal government, not to the state government, but guarantee your constituents that they have the right to choose. And that's what this amendment does, as opposed to anything else that's in SJ2. I ask for your support.
Thank you. Yeas and nays have been requested. The question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 2 to Senate joint resolution number 2. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Barnard?
No. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson? Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
No.
Cooper, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
That amendment has failed. There is a third amendment. That is the Rothfuss amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, Third Reading Amendment Number 3, delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Rothfuss, would you like to move and discuss that amendment at this time?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move Third Reading Amendment Number 3. Mr. President, this amendment tries to go to what I think the core is of what people want, and it's what we heard from the good senator also from Casey a few moments ago. What this amendment tries to do is not simply to reinforce the state's rights or to fight a battle with the federal government, but to secure the right to health care independence to the people of Wyoming. It simplifies greatly what we currently have and takes it to the point where it actually sounds like a constitutional amendment that would be inserted in Section 1, Article 38. It's not a piece of legislation. It's a sound theory of what the rights of the individual to choose health care access could be. As it reads, the right to health care independence, including individual health care autonomy, open access to services, and an unrestricted choice of providers, shall be reserved to the people of Wyoming. If we want individual choice in our health care, Mr. President. If we want the people to have the right to choose, then we should make it a reserved right to the people. It is not a matter of legislating. It is not a matter of trying to say that the states get to decide instead of the federal government. If we truly want this to be a right of the people, then we should call it a right of the people. We don't need a bunch of exceptions carved out. We don't need additional language that says when the state can or can't infringe, when the federal government can or can't infringe. We simply call it a reserved right. There's a tremendous amount of case law that says when a state or the federal government can infringe upon a reserved right. We have that established. The Supreme Court will know how to handle this in extreme situations. But what this does, Mr. President, is specifically define this as a reserved right of the people. And I believe that is what the voters are interested in hearing. I believe that's truly reflective of what we're trying to accomplish. And having a bunch of carve-outs in a complicated statute is only going to create more unintended consequences. I believe this gets at the heart of the issue, Mr. President, and I would urge adoption of third reading amendment number 3, Mr. President. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, rising on and against the amendment. Mr. President, I was trying to draft this amendment, and I thank the sponsor for doing that a few minutes before we took up this morning. And I've been trying to, and you know, the language sounds good. It sounds like where we're trying to go. But I'm trying to think, now, what are the unintended consequences of adopting this language? Right of health care independence, individual autonomy. I see three things that make me very nervous. One, there are some cases where we have to take individuals' autonomy in terms of their own health care away as a matter of mutual protection. The used to be you did that in smallpox with quarantines and whatnot, forced vaccination. We've eradicated that. We have drug-resistant tuberculosis. We talked about that the other day. You get a case of that, you're going to be quarantined, you're going to be treated whether you like it or not, because if you're not, you are a clear and present danger to all the rest of us. That disease, Mr. President, used to be a major killer. I think this would forbid that. Professional licensure. Open access to services and unrestricted choice of providers. With that language, how can we require that a provider have professional licensure? Now, a lot of our licensure is pure and simple economic protectionism. But there is some element, particularly in the healthcare area, of protection of the public, and I think this would do away with our ability to have any professional licensure. Third, we have a very liberal judiciary in this state. We've seen that in our educational decisions. Why isn't this exactly the same sort of thing that could lead the judges to telling us we've got to pay for all the health care that anybody wants in the state? I am nervous that if we put this language in this form, we run the risk of all three of those unintended consequences, Mr. President. And for that reason, I would urge the Senate to defeat the amendment. Senator Bebout.
President, call for the ayes and nays.
Ayes and nays being called. Any other comments, questions on this amendment? Senator Rossos, would you like to take a second opportunity, final opportunity?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would. If what we're hearing from my good colleague from Natrona County is true, then perhaps we really don't want health care freedom. I mean, that's possible. That's something that perhaps we haven't really considered. We're all talking about it, but we're adding so many restrictions to all of our amendments, and we're requiring so many exceptions to be in place that it's very possible that this body wants to want health care freedom, but the reality could be that it's just not a reasonable objective for us to obtain through a constitutional amendment. The amendment that I'm offering you is individual health care freedom. It is the most freedom of any of the amendments that we have seen before, so far. It does not have carve-outs. It does not have exceptions. It is trying to give the choice of an individual's health care to the individual. If you want to vote against this amendment, that is certainly, certainly your right, fellow senators. But what you're doing is you're voting against health care freedom at that point. You're voting against an individual's right to choose their own health care outcomes. And that's a reasonable choice, but that's the choice we'll be making, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeas and nays have been requested. The question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 3 to Senate Joint Resolution number 2. The Chief Clerk will call the roll on that amendment.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis? Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
no.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 11 ayes, 19 noes.
That amendment has failed. I have been given a fourth amendment, and my assumption is that you all have that out there. The fourth amendment is the Meyer Amendment. And I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, third reading amendment number 4. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Meyer, would you like to move that amendment and discuss it at this time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 4 to SJ2 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I've heard a lot of the debate over the course of this resolution coming through, and I listened to what our reading clerk read to us. I think when we brought this joint resolution up on third reading, and I think it's in the spirit of that discussion and the debate that we've had, The original intent of this bill is that I bring this amendment. As you can see, it's the first part of the amendment is almost exactly the same as what the good senator from Johnson County brought and we passed it, with the exception that we define on line 27, we add the descriptor reasonably. And that says that the right to choose health care access as reasonably defined by the legislature. I think we had to close that door some. I think we've had a lot of discussion on that without some restriction as to what the legislature could do, there was no guarantee at all as far as the right to choose health care access. And so I added a descriptor reasonably. The other part of the amendment is part of what the good senator from Casper brought in and at the end, when that's the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue governmental infringement. And, Mr. President, that was really the emphasis of this bill, and I think the discussion that we had throughout the summer and throughout the time period when the Governmental Health Care Act was passed from the federal level, of our citizens saying that, what is Wyoming doing? Why aren't we doing anything? And we have done something. I think that's history. We did join the Florida suit. That is moving along quite well for our regard. But this puts it into the Constitution that if this happens again, then the State of Wyoming shall act and gives direction to the governor and the attorney general to do that. And, Mr. President, what I'm trying to do here is trying to get an amendment forward where hopefully we would have the necessary support to move this through the whole process. And that, so, Mr. President, that's why I brought this. I think these issues have been discussed and debated. The big difference in what I tried to bring here was the word reasonably defined rather than just defined. And I think that tightens it up enough to know that people have some protection against this body from doing something that is unreasonable.
Schiffer?
Mr. President, a number of years ago, my colleague from Goshen County had a good amendment, and I believe now he's got a second one. I ask for your support.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I was here a number of years ago, and I think that one was better. Mr. President, this proposed amendment suffers from the same problem as the early one about the definition being performed by the legislature. And if you look at all the other things in Article 1, it doesn't say the right to keep and bear arms as reasonably defined by the legislature. It doesn't say to be secure in your possessions as reasonably defined by the legislature. It doesn't say that we are equal as reasonably defined by the legislature. Let's vote this one down, too, and I would call for the ayes and nays.
Any other? Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the language that we're looking at now suffers from, frankly, the amendment that stands from which we're now debating. And I understand from prior discussion that people would like to make, and there are constituents out there that would like to take a constitutional provision addressing health care choices and somehow catapult that into a Tenth Amendment argument, a statement against the federal government. And when you take a look at the language, the State of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue governmental infringement. That second statement is intended to be a combative statement about an entity that does not exist in a form that can even take an end. As we begin to look at it and talk about what our Constitution does, and once again take a look at Section 37 of the Constitution that says the State of Wyoming is an indispensable part of the Federal Union, and the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. When you look at your Constitution, there are three parts to the government that govern the State of Wyoming. There's an executive branch, there's a legislative branch, and they're actually called departments, incidentally, the legislative department, and there's a judicial department. If you want to direct the executive branch to undertake to take actions and to enforce, fair enough. You set a policy and you direct by legislation what the executive branch has done to take to do. And if you want the legislature to pass laws consistent with your Constitution, you set it. But frankly, there is no mechanism for the State of Wyoming as an entity to do anything other than exist as something that we are a part of by agreement. The State of Wyoming can't sign a document. The State of Wyoming cannot undertake to do anything. It does not exist in that form of an entity. And unfortunately, we've taken this notion that we're trying to combat and put in a language that does not operate or effectively combined with a state entity that can't read or write or walk. And unfortunately, the notion you're going to take that into a constitutional provision creates great inconsistency and is not appropriate for a constitutional amendment.
Other commentary before sponsor of the amendment takes his final response? Seeing none, I guess, Senator Meyer, would you like to take your final
Yeah, Mr. President, I was unaware that the state of Wyoming was, could not act in this area. I felt that we are actually acting in this area by acting lawfully under the law and under our Constitution and using the other branch of government, which is the judicial branch, to bring that action forward. And we have acted against the undue influence of infringement, governmental infringement, concerning our medical rights of our citizens. But this puts it in the Constitution that if this happens again and we have the same problem that we've had in the past and we use our court systems to act in, that's the venue that we act. We're not impudent from that particular venue, and that's exactly what this says. So in regard to that division there, the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue governmental infringement, that's what this whole resolution is about. And I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 4 to Senate Joint 2, the yeas and nays have been requested. I would ask that the chief clerk call a roll in regard to this amendment number 4.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern? President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 4 ayes, 26 noes.
That amendment has failed. We are now back on the Senate joint resolution. Is there any discussion in regard to the joint resolution number 2, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, as we go forward on a proposal to change our Constitution. Language means what it is. Words are important. And the obligation is to create a Constitution and a provision in the Constitution that has meaning, that accomplishes our goals, defines our rights. The language that we were left with simply doesn't accomplish that. The language is fraught with ambiguity. It is fraught with problems that will be wrestled with. It will create more problems than it solves. As pointed out earlier, prior discussion, language provides that somehow the state of Wyoming shall take an act that it can't even take. The judiciary acts on behalf of the state. The legislature, we come here and represent our constituents and act on behalf of the state, and the executive branch acts on behalf of the state and its constituencies. But to suggest that somehow the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve the certain rights of undue governmental infringement, it is a combative form. It is fraught with ambiguity. It does not provide a rudder against which certain people are going to act or what's going to be done. It simply does not belong in a constitutional amendment.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've had a lot of discussion among us on this amendment, a lot of good discussion. We've brought out a lot of good points. But now we're not deciding whether or not these words will go into our Constitution. We're deciding whether or not we're going to let the people decide. So I say at this point, let's put it out and let the people vote on it.
I'd caution against the talking in the back, please. Thank you, Senator Nutting. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. And you know, I have a tremendous respect and deference for my colleague from Albany County. But if we go into the Constitution, we do find certain directives, sometimes explicit and sometimes implicit, to the state of Wyoming in general. For example, if you go to Article 18, Section 1, acceptance of lands from the United States, the state of Wyoming hereby agrees to accept lands of the state heretofore made. I mean, there, if you go in here, you find that if you go into the loaning that we talked about, the state of Wyoming shall not indebted, and it should not create or issue its own indebtedness. So we find here's in Article 16, Section 9, the provision of Section 6 of Article 16 of this Constitution prohibiting the state from engaging in work. So we are talking about the state in general in numerous places in the Constitution, and even if you go into Article 1, certainly when we talk about detaining witnesses, we talk about in Section 12, no person shall be detained as a witness in any criminal prosecution longer than is necessary. Well, who would detain them? It would be the state of Wyoming or one of its political subdivisions or one of its departments. So when we talk about that, the Constitution is intended to be a limit on government. And that's what it is in the U.S. Constitution. That's what it is in the United States Constitution. It provides both a limit and a framework from which the power of the people are granted to individuals such as ourselves, such as the governor, such as the judges in the courts, to act on behalf of them in instituting and carrying out and enforcing our laws, enforcing our the things we've decided are that we have the power to do within that framework. I think that the amendment we have before us does that. It provides a framework. It can't both be general in nature and not totally unambiguous. I mean, the very nature that we want broad statements requires that there be some ambiguity in there. And so it's a fine line that you walk. Is it perfect? By no means. I don't think that this is perfect. Would it be perfect? I don't know. We could probably spend a lot more time on it, Mr. President. But I think it's a situation. Look at the words themselves. Decide if it's the right path or not the right path, and then vote it up or down, and follow your conscience. That's what we should do. And I urge your favorable consideration.
Other comments at this time, Senator Nicholas, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe that sponsors of this amendment intend that subsection D would apply with respect to the relationship between the state of Wyoming and other governmental entities, such as the federal government. Suppose, however, the legislature begins to create restrictions, offer restrictions that would limit health care, requiring immunizations, imposing requirements. Does now the executive branch have an obligation to bring suit against the legislative branch on behalf of the state to prevent that because it is undue governmental infringement? It's a perplexing sentence. And the more you think about it, I submit to you, the more perplexing it becomes.
Other comments? Question being called. Senate Joint Resolution 2, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll, and with a reminder that this does take a two-thirds majority in order to pass. Chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer. Nicholas.
No.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fladern.
No.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, having received the affirmative vote of the two-thirds majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Joint Resolution 2 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file.
President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Peterson, would you like to come to the desk, please?
Committee Hall, come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 95. The reading clerk will read in the bill.
Senate File 95, Legislative Committee Membership, an act relating to the legislature, sponsored by Senator Meyer. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hastert, Martin, Nicholas, and Ross. Senator Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation. On Senate File 95, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask to be read in at this time.
Senate File 95, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 95, and for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, I yield the floor to the prime sponsor, Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I brought this bill, I guess, to kind of look at a problem that I thought that may exist. The minority party and majority party, I think, has worked together very well in the spirit of organizing the legislature and the proportionality on the standing committees. And I asked myself the question whether that spirit of cooperation would be able to carry forward into some of the other committees that are the select committees, and it found out that we have some statutory restraints that would not allow that cooperation to exist in these areas. And so I looked at the need to have proportional representation and to make sure that certain Senate and House districts weren't overrepresented across the state in individual districts over other districts, and asked the LSO office to look at the different select committees we had that were statutorial to try to get that proportional representation. And that's what this bill does. It does so in the Management Council, on page 1 and 2, over on the management audit, select committee on page 3, over to 4, and you go to the water development, select water committee on 4, and over on the school facilities on page 5. Now, I use the word proportionality, but you get into a little trouble when you use that word just with the math. And the rules committee, I think, figured that out with LSO and made some amendments so you could continue the spirit of cooperation between the leadership of both parties on the House and Senate. But with that cooperation, they could move toward proportionality, but always make sure that there was representation of the minority party with the way they structured the amendments. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we can go into the amendments here, where frankly they're all along the same lines. They just provide flexibility in the ability to appoint more from one party than the other, but always making sure there's at least one member of the minority party, and it does so in all of those different areas. There's also another conforming amendment, as if you will, is that in these committees, the appointment date was by March 15th, but to conform with the passage of this act and the selection of committee members in this session, that was moved to March 31st to give the presiding officers the time to make those appointments if this bill does indeed become law. So that is the intent of the bill. I believe the standing committee did an excellent job in providing for the intent and providing for the continued cooperation and of the minority and majority parties in the spirit of the bill, and would ask for the vote on the standing committee amendment, and would stand for any specific questions on that.
We are on the standing committee amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. All those are in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment, number 1, to Senate File 95, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill?
Yeah, the amendment was pretty much the bill.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Hastert.
Chairman, there was a lot of discussion on this bill in the Rules Committee, a couple of things that were omitted in an amendment that I'm going to bring on second reading that we had discussed in the Rules Committee. But I do want to compliment the leadership for bringing this to the minority party. We have done a lot of this in cooperation. We have, both parties have been working very well together. I'd be honest, when I first saw the bill, it was kind of a shock to me because I felt that we were already doing a lot of this. But I could see the necessity and the fact that the statute language needed to be changed. A couple of minor tweaks that I'll talk about on second reading about a not less than one and a couple other odds and ends that I think we had passed in Rules Committee that aren't in this, but totally the spirit of cooperation between leaderships on both sides was really good on this.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to back up what the good minority floor leader said, unfortunately, the way in which this proceeded, it became a little bit complicated
as we had members in appropriations in and out, and then also we had to call the council over from the House to help us with the amendments. And quite frankly, there is a couple of amendments that should be in this amendment and were not. And the good minority floor leader is absolutely correct. And apologize for that not getting in there. But one of them is, of course, that that there be on these particular committees no less than one minority member. That will be something that I would be glad to join with the minority floor leader on in second reading, but just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Question being called, are we on the bill? No further discussion? And all those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee of the whole rises report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 95, say aye. Opposed, say no. That bill passes. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 132. The reading clerk will read in the Senate file.
Senate File 132, Strangulation of a Household Member, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Senator Hastert. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report that do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 132... I thought that there was a standing committee amendment on this. There is? And we've read that in?
No.
If we could read in the standing committee amendment, please.
Senate File 132, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration and... for the explanation of the amendment and the Senate file, I would ask you to call on the bill sponsor, the good minority floor leader.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring Senate File 132, Strangulation of a Household Member. As many of you will remember, there was a bill on strangulation a couple years ago that we brought through the Senate and ended up getting amended quite extensively over in the House and kind of ended up in a little bit different area. And since then, the prosecutors have realized the error of their ways and realized that, you know, realistically, we need strangulation on its own statute. You know, strangulation, members of the Senate, Mr. Chairman, is deadly. 10% of the murders are by strangulation. There was a Midwest County fatality review team found that strangulation is often one of the last abusive attacks committed by a violent domestic partner before murder. Unconsciousness can occur within seconds, death in minutes. 11 pounds of pressure properly applied to both sides of the neck will produce unconsciousness in approximately 10 seconds. A person can die in 3 days or 3 days later from injuries sustained by being strangled. Now, 85% of the time, strangulation leaves no photographical marks. Injuries are hard to believe, and people expect to see marks. That's why part of the reason, and I'm going to get into why we need to have a separate crime in its own selection. It's a different dynamic. Strangulation is a different dynamic. It doesn't really come up to what people would expect a serious bodily injury. Unlike aggravated assaults, the perpetrator is not usually trying to cause serious bodily injury. He's merely showing the victim that he has the control and that he has the power of life and death over her. Approximately 90% of the cases, the perpetrator has a history of domestic violence, and in 99% of the time, the perpetrators are male. The most violent crimes leave marks, physical signs of injury. Strangulation usually does not. Police and prosecutors and judges need to hear from us that strangulation is serious and deserves serious investigation and punishment. The prosecutors have acknowledged that, as I said, that they were in error. We had testimony from a doctor. We had a coroner come to the committee meeting and discuss and talk about what happens basically under the skin and about how devastating, you know, this strangulation is. We have 29 states that have their own strangulation statutes. And the strangulation is the leading indicator of future domestic murder. In an article about strangulation in a national periodical, it says that states are targeting choking incidents because when the abuser tries to strangle someone in a domestic assault, it's the leading indicator that will escalate his attacks and eventually kill his victim. And a prosecutor from the Northeast says, states also need to train officers and prosecutors to look for evidence of strangulation, which can be hard to prove without bruises on the victim. Now, it's going to be tough to prove. And it's not, by putting this into its own statute, it isn't going to cause a flood of cases being prosecuted. We're defining it narrowly to a household member. That really is where the issues are with this. 85% of the time, there's not going to be photographable evidence. It's going to be the burden on the prosecutor still to undertake this. But when they have the ability to do it, let's give them the tool they need to prosecute for strangulations and stop these kind of heinous crimes. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Okay, we are still on the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment. Question being called for on the amendment. Senator Ross.
Discussion on the amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the amendment does is to delete an exception, which is paragraph C. And I'm not sure that's a good idea. The paragraph C on page 2 of the bill is no person shall be guilty of strangulation, and then sends out some of the exceptions. Apparently, although I'm not in the committee and nor am I chairman of the committee, is my understanding that there are certain kinds of medical procedures, such as massaging the carotid artery or whatever else for other reasons. And I'm not sure that this would be an amendment that we wish to pass.
Senator Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm in agreement with the Majority Leader. After discussion with prosecutors and some additional individuals after a committee meeting, I think that there is some exceptions in paragraph C that offer a level of comfort. And there can be, you know, if there are some other issues or concerns that are raised, it can certainly be added in section C. So I actually would ask to defeat the amendment.
Further discussion on the standing committee amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of the, all those in favor of when Senator Perkins's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation. Oh, this is the amendment? Thank you. All those in favor of amendment, standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 132, please say aye. Any opposed?
No.
That amendment has failed. Back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I'm rising neither on or against the bill, but just to point out what I believe we need to consider when we're voting on this. What you're creating here is, is basically a strict liability in a crime. And it's really going to come down to two players, whoever was the person that was there and the person who was the victim. more often, unless there's eyewitnesses, but more often than not, it just doesn't happen that way. As the prime sponsor indicated, most of the time there's not a lot of evidence in that regard. So what we've done is created a crime here that, you know, is serious, and I am sympathetic to it, but I worry when you create this kind of crime that is strict in its ultimate sense. The other thing that I'm concerned about, because this whole, it plays into this whole area of domestic violence, and that's where the definition of household member comes in. We bring in the domestic violence statutes, and that's fine. But remember that there are abuses of that very domestic family violence domestic act that are perpetrated by the victims themselves in an effort to bootstrap themselves into a better position with regards to custody of the minor children. Now, you'd hope that that doesn't occur, but I'm here to tell you that I have seen it in my practice. And it does exist, because in the domestic violence statutes, we can grant custody, we can grant child support, we can restrain people from their residence and restrain them from each other. Important stuff. Don't take what I'm saying wrong, because we do need to address domestic violence. But there is that other component that is out there. And so I wonder, when you look at this making this a felony, if we haven't given additional leverage to bootstrap themselves into a better position. I do think the events or the acts that the prime sponsor has so vehemently argued for several years now about are important, and they do exist. And I think that those people need to be treated harshly. The question is, how do you do that? And I still have not gotten my arms around the whole problem in terms of how you define this in our statutes.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And either speaking again at this point on or against the bill, but by way of explanation, as I look at the language here, if all you have to do is impede or attempt to impede breathing, and if no injury is required, then looking at the elements that make it an offense on lines 2 through 6, all you have to do is apply pressure on the throat or the neck of a household member, blocking the nose and the mouth of the household member. My question is, and not maybe all families aren't very rough, but in my family, it was pretty common for brothers to choke each other out when we were kids, but particularly when my little brother was still a little brother. But I guess the question, without trying to be facetious, is what distinguishes brothers wrestling and maybe be angry at him and choking each other out, covering their faces, from what is, which I frankly wouldn't consider criminal conduct. It might not be appropriate behavior, but it's not criminal, certainly not a felony. What distinguishes that conduct from what you intend to prosecute?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, this is along the same lines of the discussion we had in committee, these same types issues, and one of the first protections is I think it's important, we haven't talked about this yet, but what this is a strangulation of a household member. And if I can just share with the body the definition of who a household member is. So in order for this to be a crime, it has to be an act committed between these individuals. Either have to be persons who are married to each other, persons living with each other as if married, or persons formerly married to each other. Persons formerly living with each other as if married, so you have former spouses and former partners, parents and their adult children, other adults sharing common living quarters, persons who are parents of a child but who are not living with each other, persons who are in or have been in a dating relationship. And I think for purposes and elsewhere in the family, an adult under the Family Violence Act is someone who's 16 years of age or older. So that's where you're at with those brothers. So the answer to the question is if they're 15 and you're choking out your younger brother at age 15, you're not technically guilty of this crime. But if you're 16 and you're choking out your brother, you are guilty of this crime, technically. And that's I think why the body was wise in bringing back subsection C, because subsection C brings back in and starts to provide those exceptions when we're not. And so if you believe that this is an important or an issue that needs to be addressed, and this is a way to do it, one of the things that we can do is this, if this bill can move forward, is that we can expand C to make sure that we're not, that's why we can start to carve out the exceptions that we would have. For example, you'd be free to up the age of adults. You could talk about athletic events. You could talk about other types of things that would potentially create a safe harbor for certain types of actions to make sure that they're not prosecuted. We can rely upon prosecutors' discretion, and ultimately I think that there's a lot to be said for that. However, for that one individual who is maybe the victim of an overzealous prosecutor, that's of little or no comfort to that individual. But as a whole, I think that most prosecutors over time, or if they're too aggressive, they're voted out of office. But we hope that there's that restraint. But that's of little or cold comfort to those whose lives can certainly be impacted by an overzealous prosecution. So you were having the same discussions here that we had in committee, and I just bring that to the body's attention, I would like to see this bill move forward, see if there's some things that we can work on it to fix it and make it so it does what we want it to do and does not do what we do not intend it to do. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Senator Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I understand our good majority floor leader's concerns, but remember that this is about an ability to prosecute in a situation where there's evidence to do that. Do those kind of things happen today? Yes. Is it unfortunate? Yes. But is the vast majority in need of help? Yes. There are instances where somebody might make something up. And is this going to prevent somebody from making something up? No. This is just simply, and there still has to be prosecutable evidence. Prosecutors aren't going to bring these things into the court unless they have some measure that they can win. You know, I certainly understand that sometimes, you know, in any cases, any laws and anything can get abused. But this bill is just about if you have the ability, if you have the evidence, and you're able to make the case, it has a tool here for a prosecutor to do this. I certainly appreciate the good chairman from the Judiciary Committee pointing out what a household member is and the age limitations in there. And I certainly, and the fact that we have the Section C in there, you know, it has some of the exemptions. And, certainly if that's something that the body feels that is necessary. But don't deny the fact, or please don't deny the victims and the prosecutors when they have the ability to do this, when they have the evidence, they can move on this.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other concern, I suppose we can work on the language on 12 through 17 to begin to carve out additional exceptions to make sure that 16-year-old brothers, 18-year-olds, I don't think we actually got over that phase till we went to college and long after it, but maybe others got out of the stage earlier. But with respect to let's go back to the marital or dating relationship, because I think that's really what the domestic violence issues that we're trying to address. And if we restrict this crime to those of domestic violence, then it seems to me that you have at least three categories of potential harm. One is the instance where you frankly have a husband or wife who exercises just bad judgment and in a fight, argumenting, throws his arm around, he or she throw their arm around and do this without harm. And that's what's critical, is you have two things that are happening. One is, what was your intent? An intent crime. And then the issue is how badly did you do it? And in this instance, since no injury is required, then the only salient facts for the crime are 2 through 6, and that is the, let's say, a chokehold. So you have one level of intent, and that is where the spouse really did not intend to harm the other spouse, but in bad judgment tried to restrain the spouse, put your neck or arm around. You see on movies, wives jumping up on top of the husband and trying to chokehold him. Bad judgment. Certainly, I wouldn't think that that would stand for a felony conviction. The second area is where you really intended to harm the person, and you just wanted to hurt them, and you bruise the neck, you cause a bruise. Whether that is a misdemeanor or a felony, you ought to have judgment. It seems to me the prosecutor, if it's, and then the third area, which I think is where the sponsor is really intending to go, and that is where you actually intend. When the spouse went for the juggler, if you will, the spouse intended to kill that person, but didn't do it. There's no harm. It seems now I think you may be arriving at the level of a felony. But it looks to me like the scope of what this is intent. If the intent was the intent to harm, to kill somebody, or to seriously injure them, if that was your intent, then maybe that's a felony. But unless you define that intent and what the intent is when the strangulation was undertaken, then it seems to me you have swept up a lot of conduct that really doesn't warrant a felony conviction.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my questions about this bill go to whether how our existing laws are inadequate. And I have heard that the testimony that there's often no evidence. It's undetectable. There's no physical evidence, perhaps, or physical evidence is difficult to find. But that in and of itself doesn't convince me that we need an entirely new crime. I mean, I'd like to be persuaded as to why, assault and battery statutes, attempted murder statute, or other things within the area of domestic violence with intent to cause bodily harm would not be adequate, as far as the penalties involved. And why do we need a new crime? I've definitely heard that the evidence is hard to detect, but that doesn't persuade me that we need a new crime. So please help me with that one.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, as a co-sponsor of this, I very much appreciate what we're trying to accomplish with this, the way to address someone who terrorizes another one, and that control and that domination or intent, hard to grasp the intent of it, but that fear-based intimidation. As a parent of a 16 and a 17-year-old boy, that'd be two boys, but that are both in wrestling, when I look at page 2 line two, applying pressure on the throat or neck, going to a wrestling tournament Saturday, and very, very common, whether it's a head and arm or some other figure four, there's a whole lot of those holds. And while they do have referees there that are all about that, applying pressure to that area, and they just use it. And we discussed in the committee about the judgment of officers and prosecutors and juries and judges, but I still struggle with plain language that talks about that kind of a situation where two brothers in that age range who participate in a sport that everybody accepts that those are techniques and tactics that are used over and over, that the language of this actually says we're going to have to rely upon judgment from, you know, prosecutors, because the plain words would define it as a felony. I'm not sure how to get around that. You know, we talked about it at length. The other part that we talked about that was the intent and how difficult. We had testimony that talked about how difficult it was to prove intent. And I can certainly appreciate that. And if there was a way to word to attach, you know, a perception of terror or terrorizing on the behalf of the victim. But there's some questions and some struggles with this. But the one that really is just I go back to over and over is, you know, two brothers, 16, 17, 18, participate in a high school event. And that's part of that's what they do, is apply that pressure. And the words here are still a big challenge for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. This bill is one of the tough ones we deal with, because there is a very real evil that we're trying to deal with that's out there that happens that sometimes leads to terrible tragedy. At the same time, it's a difficult to prove what's going on here. And at the same time, we're also hearing that, yes, the victim sometimes exaggerates, brings a false claim for reasons of strengthening their position in a divorce or custody proceeding. So you've got a very difficult area. And the question I want to ask is, it's one thing if these things always, the prosecutor made a charge and they always went to a jury. But my understanding is that almost never happens. And that what you wind up with, if there's a set of criminal charges here, is a negotiated plea. This is a 10-year felony. And I really ask those with more real experience in the courts, are the prosecutors, particularly if they've taken sides, and being only human, I think they do sometimes take sides in one of these disputes, are they likely to use the existence of this kind of charge, bring it based just on the allegation, and then say, well, okay, you know, it's a 10-year felony, we can cut a deal for, if you'll plead guilty to a much lesser charge. And then if the accusation was basically false, you've served the purpose of increasing somebody's standing elsewhere, gotten somebody who really can't afford to contest the lesser charge for fear of the greater one, and really has been denied their day in court. Is that really the way it might potentially work in the court system? That's the question I have.
Ready for Senator Hester.
Well, yeah. You know, these wrestling matches and these brothers-on-brothers kind of stuff, now, come on. What prosecutor is ever going to do this? Wrestling matches and sporting events are already, and I'm sure that one of these attorneys can give me the exact language, but these are covered. You know, these, if you go out to a sporting event You're not going to, nobody's ever going to get, it has to be a family member, first of all. You got, and two brothers, you know, and if you got two brothers that are adults and the other one causes, you know, and he practically kills somebody, maybe he should be prosecuted. But that's not where we're at. Is a prosecutor going to get somebody in that wrestling match at school? Of course not. To answer the questions of why it needs to be in its own statutes, it's because it doesn't come up to the level of serious bodily injury. And it's not about that there's no injury required. It's that the injury isn't visible. There is plenty of injury. There's plenty of terror. There is plenty that's happening under the skin, so to speak. And it's not that injury isn't required. It's that by definition of serious bodily injury, it doesn't come up to that. And can, and here again, we talk about, well, the in every instance, in everything you do in life, you have the five percenters. You have the five percenters at work that don't do what they're supposed to do. You have the five percenters in anything that you've got. You know, one, two, five, what do you pick the percent? That is the reason we have some laws today. And you're always going to have someone that makes an attempt to make some kind of false accusation. You've got, the laws are replete with areas where somebody can make a false accusation. What it comes down to is we have victims being hurt. We have victims, people. We have people being hurt. We have people being killed. We have people being terrorized. And they get away with it. There was a case in Gillette just recently that where this just happened. And I just am, you know, it just doesn't come up to my good senator from Fremont County. It doesn't come up. It can't be in that statute. It doesn't fit the definition of serious bodily injury. And that's what we were trying to argue in the past. So the fact is, you know, it has to be a household member under these conditions that give the prosecutors. And they have to come up and find the evidence. Are you going to find some rogue prosecutor somewhere that might be overzealous? Possibly. Are they going to last? No. Has there been cases where people have been falsely accused and falsely imprisoned? Yes. It's one of the reasons I've been against the death penalty, because there's evidence has shown that there's been people on death row that are innocent. But what we have here, what I'm asking you, and what this bill is simply asking, is when the prosecutor has the ability, has the evidence, that he has the tool to stop these kind of heinous kind of crimes. It needs to be its own statute. The 29 other states have recognized this, and simply from one of our, from the far north, Northwest, their finding was that the legislature finds that assault by strangulation may result in immobilization of a victim, may cause a loss of consciousness, injury, or even death, and has been a factor in a significant number of domestic violence-related assaults and fatalities. This is about fatalities. While not limited to acts of assault against an intimate partner, assault by strangulation is often knowingly inflicted upon an intimate partner with the intent to commit physical injury or substantial or great bodily harm. Strangulation is one of the most lethal forms of domestic violence. The particular cruelty of this offense and its potential effects upon a victim, both physically and psychologically, merit its categorization and as a ranked felony offense. I ask you to consider that and consider that seriously. And please, let's help these people that are.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to respond to the question with respect to stacking of offenses. And certainly if a prosecutor stacks offenses by throwing on a felony, that changes the equation, because as we've all talked about, while we're here. Civil rights are important. Rights to bear arms are important. And when you, if you legitimately have a stacked crime as one of the charged offenses, there are many times where, frankly, you will plea bargain to something that that's a lower offense simply to avoid the likelihood, even if you think you're going to win it. But the loss of civil rights is such a drastic consequence that stacking can have a real impact. Will this crime be used to stack? I have to say, I don't think it does. And the reason why is because this exercise that we're going through, folks, it's not just mental gymnastics. It's what courts do. We have concepts called overbroad. A statute which is overbroad and is intended to charge for criminal conduct, but it is so overbroad that it includes a lot of lawful conduct, gets thrown out. The courts will throw it out instantly because you can't have criminal statutes are intended to apply to criminal conduct. And if we can all sit around here and think of conduct which is covered by this statute, which is not criminal, it's overbroad. It will be thrown out. Statutes, another exercise courts go through is, does the punishment meet the crime? And if the punishment doesn't meet the crime, then it will be thrown out because it's not commensurate with what the event is. If this statute were assault by strangulation, and if this statute described conduct and was limited to conduct which is heinous, we wouldn't be having this discussion. The difficulty is, as my colleague from Laramie County, Majority Floor Leader, said, is on line 14, page 1, if you intentionally and knowingly impede, remember the discussion over the ladder, person on top of the ladder, somebody comes in and knowingly shakes it as a joke, and it has bad consequences, person falls off the ladder. That's not a crime unless he went up with intent to harm. One person goes up to do a prank, hurts somebody. The other person with intent to harm comes up and shakes that, and the harm takes place. Now, the intent to harm, you might be prosecuted for that even if he doesn't fall off. If he falls off, then you get to another level of there. So what's missing here is any type of what we call scienter, intent to harm. And then the next problem with the bill is that it doesn't recognize that there are, if you intend to harm somebody, one is a bruise. One is with intent to kill somebody. Both of them are not felonies. And it's not good enough when you're passing laws to say, oh, look, nobody, these crimes won't be charged, everybody will exercise judgment. It's not our job to create broad statutes, send it out to prosecutors and law enforcement to say, you make the call. We make the calls here. And if we don't, the laws are thrown out. And they have no impact.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just to follow up a little bit and explain some of the things that happened in the committee and why some of this may seem familiar to some of you. A couple of years ago, the prime sponsor of this bill brought legislation to change the aggravated assault statute to include language that was very similar to some of this. Ultimately, it went out, that change to the aggravated assault statute went out of this chamber. But ultimately, the bill that was ultimately passed, all it did was add attempts to the ag assault statute. So if you inflict or attempt to inflict serious bodily injury on an individual, and this is in direct answer to the good senator from Fremont County's question, if you attempt to inflict serious bodily injury, then that was that's how that bill ended up and how we addressed the ag assault a couple years ago. The problem that we've had is that even in situations our Wyoming Supreme Court has found and held that essentially if you can recover from an injury inflicted during a crime, that that's not serious bodily injury. So You had a situation, the testimony several a couple of years ago, which is very similar to this bill, was that you have victims of domestic violence generally who are beaten, bloodied, choked, oftentimes into unconsciousness, and the Supreme Court has held that they can recover from those, so that's not serious bodily injury. And so that's what the good senator here is trying to address, is those situations in this. And just by way of explanation, the reason we had this discussion about intent in committee, the same one, and actually the original standing committee amendment would have put intent and taken out the subsection 3 that we put back in today. Ultimately, the testimony was from prosecutors that they begged and pleaded that they not take intent out. So intent wasn't taken out, but then I think the committee mistakenly withdrew subparagraph C, which we put back in. But that's the very issue and the very essence that you have, and the same discussions that we had in committee, and not against the bill, but just trying to explain and answer some of the questions that were asked earlier.
All right, were you ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 132, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
That Senate file has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion passes.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements?
Mr. Senator Geis.
Your committee, Agriculture, will meet tonight upon adjournment and will handle House Bill Engrossed Wyoming Traditional Food Act, House Bill 15, Engrossed Weed and Pest Control, House Bill 57, Feral Livestock, and House Bill 18, Engrossed Quarantine of Animals.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 2nd, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S18 to consider Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, House Bill 108, Engrossed Collection Agencies, and House Bill 112, Engrossed Mining Permits.
Senator Koch.
Education will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock over here in S11 by the smoking lounge to take up further deliberations on Senate File 130, Teacher Certification 2. That's continuing from Monday. Senate File 153, Health Education and Law Enforcement Prevention Grants, and Senate File 140, Kindergarten Attendance.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February the 2nd, at 8 a.m. in room S1 to consider the following bills. HB 105, Temporary Military Duty, Child Custody and Visitation. House Bill 68, Violent Felony Definition Expansion. House Bill 19, Assignment of Retired Circuit Court Judges.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in approximately 15 minutes. Room S16 to take up Senate File 129, Agriculture Land Subdivisions, and House Bill 60, Taxation of Oil and Gas Field Services.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, is going to meet at 1 o'clock to take up the final work, we hope, of Senate File 103, Gillette Madison Project Financing, Senate File 107, Energy Impacted Roads Program, and Senate File 127, Gillette Madison Water Project. If we get the comments back from staff, we will go on to Senate File 70, Education Accountability. And on adjournment, Senate Appropriations Committee will take up Senate File 144, State Funded Construction Projects Preference Provisions.
Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries. The Senate stands recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon.